And I'm Rob, and welcome to Eastlake Church. This is a church for everyone. The topic today is purpose, and specifically your purpose, my purpose. What are we on earth for? Why are we here? Why in the world am I on this earth? Take your notes if you would. And the big idea is purpose is the energy of life. When you don't have purpose, if life is the car, then purpose is the gasoline. When you don't have purpose, when you don't have something to get you out of bed every single morning, life becomes just sort of a drag, and eventually you can get stuck in depression. If you don't have something greater, if there's not some sort of purpose that gets you moving, purpose is the energy of life. The moms that decide to stay home and they're going to watch the kids, and after a while they just think, is this all there is? You know, the dads that go to work every day, 9 to 5, 9 to 5. Moms go to work every day, 9 to 5, 9 to 5. Wash, rinse, repeat. Wash, rinse, repeat. Is this all there is, this just job? Some people are just about ready to finish school. They get to the end of it, and they look down the road, and they think, what's ever going to happen in my life? Purpose. How do I find my purpose? And once I find my purpose, how do I make sure that that doesn't happen, that I can keep it, that it doesn't slip away? Jesus had some things to say about it. Today we're talking about purpose. And so let's look in your notes. We'll read it. Here's a story. Jesus, it says, he went through many towns and villages. He taught in their synagogues. He preached the good news of the kingdom of God. He healed every disease and sickness. Whenever the crowds came to him, he had compassion for them because they were so deeply distraught, malaised, and heartbroken. They seemed to him to be like lost sheep without a shepherd. Jesus understood what an awesome task was before him, so he said to his disciples, the harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest to send more workers into the harvest field. So Jesus is on his ministry tour, and it says that he goes through many different towns and many different villages. He was always reaching out, reaching out, reaching out. There's no favorites with him. Everybody's included. Everybody's included. And it turns out that he's a guest speaker in church. So if you saw Jesus as the kind of person that never wanted to go to church, never went to church, he actually did. They would invite him to come into the Jewish church, and that day there was one big, large church that everybody went to. You either went to that church or you didn't go to church. And Jesus would be invited in to be a guest speaker. So lots of people in church heard him. And then the crowds would come out and they would see him afterwards. And in these crowds, there was two different types of people. There was the people that heard Jesus in church and they came out to listen to more to what he had to say. And then there were the people that didn't go to church at all. That had been me when I grew up. I grew up in a family that wasn't at all religious, and nobody went to church at all in my family. Maybe you came from a very religious family, and everybody went to church, and it was just expected. If you live under my house, in my roof, you're going to go to church every Sunday, and that happens too, and whatever it is. But there was two camps, two types of people. They go to church, and the people over here that don't go to church, and they're both in the crowd. And the interesting thing is that Jesus looks out at him, and he said, in the crowd, they both have the same thing in common. They don't have the energy to live life. So whether you're in church or you're not in church, and these words here, you can circle them in your notes. It has them in there in the scripture. It says they were deeply distraught. That means they were overcome with doubt. And then it says they were malaised. And malaise means that when you're just, you have a low level of worry that just won't go away. It's like, you know, you're always unsettled about life. Not that there's necessarily anything really wrong today, but there's this little unsettled, little low level of worry. Something's going to happen. I never feel quite right. And then brokenhearted or heartbroken. So he looks out in the crowd. He says, there's some people here that their hearts are broke. And there's all kinds of different things that can break your heart. But when your heart is broke, here's the truth right now, you don't have the will to try again. And he looks out and he says, there's some church people in the crowd, and there's some non-church people in the crowd, but they all are going through the exact same sort of thing. They don't have the energy for life. They don't have it. Now, when Jesus has these crowds together, he's talking about them, and he uses some these words to describe them. And then he has this interesting little phrase he said. He looks and he says, they're like lost sheep without a shepherd. Now, here's the thing about Jesus, and I don't know. Lots of times he'll talk about people like us or me, and he'll call us sheep. And I don't know about you, but I mean, Jesus, you know, couldn't you pick a better animal than a sheep? I mean, who wants to be, you know, referred to as a Mary had a little lamb, you know, type person? I mean, you know, Jesus, couldn't you call me a bear? Or if you're going to pick an animal for me, God, I want to be a lion or a tiger, or at least a honey badger, or something. I mean, you know, a sheep, Jesus, come on. A little lamb, I mean, to call me a sheep, that, come on. You know, of course, I brought a picture of a sheep here. But I mean, if you could be that guy right there, now that wouldn't be so bad. Look at that guy. Got the horns happening, he's all regal, he's standing, he's there, he's probably got a harem of little sheep off to the side, and there's that guy, you know, and he said, but that's not the kind of sheep that Jesus is talking about. He's talking about someone more like this right here. Look at that guy. Now that's pretty lost. It's a lost sheep. And that's what Jesus is saying. He's saying, if you're disconnected from God, you'll be like this guy. You'd be like a lost sheep. Where do I go now? And when you're a lost sheep, what it causes is I'm overwhelmed with doubt. And there's this low level of worry that's there all the time. I can never take the edge off it. And I don't have the energy for life. And what's interesting, when Jesus divides these camps, he sees the church people and the non-church people, and they're all mixed together. He doesn't say the reason they have these problems in their life is because they've gone through a divorce or a bankruptcy, or they have money problems, or they just broke up with someone, or they can't meet their quota at work, or their kids are super crazy and they can't keep track of them at home, or their car broke down. He doesn't say any of those things, although those are a real problem. He says the central issue is the disconnect from the shepherd. That's why you're a lost sheep. Doesn't name any of the things a lot of us would think about. Oh, you know, if I could just get my family to line up and get my money situation all squared away, if I could get this job ironed out, if I could just get all that stuff happening, then my purpose would be there. And Jesus is saying, no, it's none of those things. It's something very, very simple that everybody can relate to. You're either connected or you're not. And if you're not connected, then there's our plight. Now, he seems to be pretty optimistic about it. He says that he understands the awesome task before him. These two different types of people, they fall into two different camps. One camp is the people that they look towards the world. You can take that down. That's going to make someone scared if we don't get that off there. Someone's going to think, well, he's brainwashing me. So the two different types of people. There's the type of people that... they look towards the world and they just think to themselves, like, what does the world have to offer me? If I can just, like, get the things that the world says I should have, then I'll have my purpose. And so for a lot of people, you know, it starts with, I'm going to have tons and tons of sex. I'm going to find anybody I can have sex with. I mean, here's how my life is going to have tons of purpose. It's going to be just fabulous, you know. If I can just have lots and lots and lots and lots of sex, I can just find all kinds of people to have sex with. And of course, if you're married, lots and lots of sex is a good thing. But if you're not married, I mean, you know, just tons and tons and tons of sex, that's what's going to make my life great. And then they find out, well, that doesn't work. And then the other thing is money. So I'm just going to try to get as much money as I can. I'm going to cut all kinds of corners. I'm going to try, and here's the thing too, I'm going to try to get as much money as I can with putting out as little amount of effort as possible. If I can get that equation to work where I don't have to put a... When I was younger, I used to watch the guys that held the sign on the highway, and I thought, that's got to be the greatest job ever. Stop. Go. And I thought, man, I want to grow up and be that guy, because that guy doesn't even have to hardly do anything. You know, and I just thought, because you know, like in our minds, like, as little effort as I can put out and get the most amount of money possible, if that could happen for me. Or here's the new one. Here's the great one now. Look as young as I possibly can for as long as I possibly can. That's the one now. That's the one that's got us now. It's like, just try to be as young looking as you possibly can so everybody's getting something tucked and snipped and pulled and yanked and expanded and despanded and you know, I mean, that's going on everywhere. I mean, there's just tons of that stuff going on. Because if I could just look young all the time, if you look at me and you think, because what is a better compliment? You tell someone your age, they go, oh, I didn't think that. You look at least 3 years younger than that. And you're like, touchdown. It's like, my life has meaning and purpose. That $3,000 I spent is worth it. And there probably would have been lots of people in the crowd that were chasing after all sorts of things. So that's one camp right there. Whatever the world says, whatever the story, go get that stuff. Lick a sledgehammer if you have to. That'll make your life cool. There's that crowd, okay? Then There's the church crowd, because remember, the church people and all the world people, they all came together to be with Jesus. They're all there, the crowd's all there. Then there's the church people. They're there too, and they go a completely different way. They're like this to all that other stuff I just mentioned. Bad, bad. Or they do it in secret. Bad, 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 bad. But they go to church all the time, and they're in church meetings, and they keep all the church rules, and they go to all the church services, and their families have to look perfect for church, because if you put your connection with church as the secret to having the energy for life, which usually most churches will draw it right out of you, but that's another story. But if that's what you think, that like if I can just keep this church thing together, if my parents and all my relatives and everything, my friends, everybody in my neighborhood, they just see me as a good church person, I'll have the energy for life. And of course, you have to make certain that everybody sees you a certain way in the church, because that's what you're banking on to make everything come together. And Jesus looks at the entire crowd. He says, there's all the church people there playing church, and there's all the people that don't want anything to do with church at all. And look at them. They're all going through the same thing. Low-level worry all the time. I have friends that are salespeople, and they'll make their quota on the last day of the month, and the first day of the month is the only time that they ever have peace. And the second day of the month, they start to worry. Oh my God, what if I don't make it? Just a low level of worry all the time. You know why? Because the worry that they have is not connected to their circumstances. It's inside of them. And they don't realize it's because of a deeper issue. I'm lost. I'm separated. And by the way, you can be with Jesus and be a Jesus follower and be with him, and you can have your moments of lostness and disconnect. Anybody here that's married knows that. You can be married and having a great thing and everything's going well on Tuesday, and on Wednesday, disconnect. And it's the same in every relationship. And when you are disconnected, then you're lost. And the doubts come in. And the energy for life goes out. And Jesus is pretty optimistic about the whole thing. He says this, he says, you know, there's lots of people that are open to what I'm trying to tell them. And he says it's good news. And we've talked about that before. When Jesus came, he wasn't bringing a philosophy or a teaching. He was announcing news. And that's different. So if you work somewhere and you miss the news, and here's the news, everybody next week gets a paid vacation for the entire week. Nobody has to come to work at all, and you're completely paid. You get your normal salary, but you don't have to come to work. The big wig has said everybody gets to spend time with their family, do whatever they want, and so the news goes out. Nobody come to work, but you miss the news, and so you come to work Monday morning, and you're sitting at your desk or in your kiosk or you're driving or whatever you do, and you're looking around, and you're thinking, where is everybody? Where's everybody at? And you call your buddy and say, hey, what's going on? Nobody's here. And he starts laughing. Did you miss the news? Because it's news now. It's not a philosophy. It's not a teaching. It's news. You can turn to God because he cares about you. You don't have to be the lost sheep. You can be connected. And Jesus said there's many, many people. I know it doesn't seem that way. I know as we go about the crowd of people in our lives, and don't we all have people in our lives? We have a lot of people that are very, very churched, and maybe you're a real church person too, or you got people that aren't churched at all. I work with a bunch of guys kind of right down the middle. Isn't it true you have those people crowded in your life, and you think about them, and you're around them, and you think, come on, Lord, they're not close. They never even think about you. Last thing in the world, I would never want to say anything to them. They would feel like I'm shoving something down their throat, or they wouldn't want to hear it, or be embarrassing. Why are you saying they're close, Lord? It's plentiful. It's ripe for harvest. Doesn't look like a harvest to me. I look out into the crowd in my life, and it looks like a barren field. There ain't nothing growing there, Lord. Now, we've called this series a double dog dare. So I don't know if you ever had anybody dare you to do anything. They dare you to do it, and you're like, I ain't doing that. Well, I double dare you. I guess if you throw a dog in at some really big deal, it's like, oh, now I better do it. You know, I don't know what that's all about. Mike Meeks, who is the person that founded all the East Lake churches, when he was in fourth grade, some kid dared him to pee on an electric fence. And I double dare you to do it. Well, Mike's in fourth grade. He doesn't want to seem like an idiot. So he did it, and he found out that water is an excellent conductor of electricity. You know, and all kinds of things can happen when you get dared. And you've maybe been somewhere in your life, and someone dared you to do that, or you can dare yourself to do something, and later you think, But in this particular section, Jesus is daring, I guess, but what he's really doing is making a request. He said, would you help me with the task? Now, here's the thing. Catch this. It's because if I'm ever going to have purpose every single day, it's because I join him in his greater purpose. If all I have in my life is my own plans and dreams, they go up and down, and purpose is always fleeting. But listen, God never stops pursuing his plans and purpose. And when I join him in his task, I always have purpose. If it's my life, up, down, up, down. See the old saying, some days I'm the pigeon, and some days I'm the statue. Some days I'm doing the crapping, sometimes the crapping's being done on me. But when I join Jesus in his task, and that's where he's the question. Let's look at a couple things right here. The first one, a prayer dare. Jesus, help me reach out. So think of the different people in your crowd. Now listen now, remember, the energy of life, the thing that was missing for them is they weren't connected. And the way you stay connected is to participate. I know it seems like sex and money and those things will keep you connected, but the truth is, when I'm connected to Jesus and his task, then I always have purpose in the energy of life. And crowds of people around us, Jesus, help me reach out. Of course, the hard part there is like, well, as I look out into my life and I see this wasteland of people, like nobody's open there, Lord, nothing's happening there. There's an interesting phrase that he says, ask the Lord of the harvest. All he's saying is you're not doing it alone. The Lord of the harvest, I'm not the Lord of the harvest. He is. I'm just helping. I want to read you something to kind of show you how sometimes how wrong we can be about how God is working. God working because the different people in your life may think, oh, nothing's going on. God's not working in their life at all. Even if I were to say to Jesus, this week I'll think about it, Lord. I'll think about how you might need me at my job, how you might need my family. Listen to this right here. It's kind of long, but listen up. Tony Campolo tells about the time he was asked to speak at a Pentecostal college. Pentecostal means people that are kind of free and they sing and they're just good Christ followers. And before the service, eight men had him kneel so they could place their hands on his head and pray. Tony was glad to have the prayer, but each of them prayed a long time, and the longer they prayed, the more they pushed on Tony's head. And then they seemed to wander in their prayer. So here's poor Tony Campolo, which, by the way, is bald-headed. And these guys are laying hands on him, which Pentecostals do. And as they're praying, they're getting more and more excited. And Lord, you know, so they're pushing Tony down because I've heard him tell this story. And so he's there underneath this whole thing. And they seem to wander in their prayer. One of the men didn't even pray for Tony. He prayed for some guy he was concerned about. He began to pray and said, dear Lord, you know Charlie Schultz? He lives in a sewer trailer down the road. He's about a mile away. You know the trailer, Lord, just down the road on the right-hand side. Now, Tony wanted to interrupt him and tell him that he thought God already knew where the guy lived and didn't need directions. But he just knelt there and kept trying to hold his head upright. The prayer went on. Lord, Charlie told me this morning that he's going to leave his wife and three kids. Step in and do something, God. Bring that family back together. The prayer went on and on and on and on. Lord, Charlie told me this morning he's going to leave his wife and three kids. Step in and do something, God. Bring that family back together. With that, the prayer time ended, and Tony went on to preach at the college chapel. Things went well. He got in his car and began to drive home. As he drove on to the Pennsylvania Turnpike, he saw a hitchhiker and felt compelled to pick him up. Tony, telling the story, said, we drove a few minutes, and I said, hey, my name is Tony Campolo. What's yours? And he said, my name is Charlie Schultzfuss. I couldn't believe it. I got off the turnpike at the next exit, and I headed right back. He got a bit uneasy at that. And after a few minutes, he said, hey, mister, where are you taking me? I said, I'm taking you home. He narrowed his eyes and asked, why? I said, because you just left your wife and three kids, right? That blew him away. Yeah, that's right. With shock written all over his face, he plastered himself against the car door and never took his eyes off me again. Then I really did him in as I drove right to his silver trailer. When I pulled up, his eyes seemed to bulge out of his head, and he asked, "How did you know that I lived here?" And I said, "God told me." When he opened the trailer door, his wife exclaimed, "You're back. You're back." He whispered in her ear, and the more he talked, the bigger her eyes got. I said with real authority, "The two of you sit down for a minute. I'm going to talk to you, and you're going to listen to me." And man, did they listen. That afternoon, I led those two young people to Jesus Christ. It seems like we're working alone. Or to me, sometimes I look out and I think, well, I see everything that's going on. But I don't. All Jesus is saying is, will you join me? Will you just join me? Because there's a harvest out there that not any of us can see. We have no idea the circumstances that are working. Who would have ever thought? But it can happen. Now here's the second prayer, Dare, right in. Jesus, help me develop compassion. And there's lots of things that can kill my compassion for other people, and normally it's how they treat me or how they behave. Of course, when you look like this guy right here, when no matter what it looks on the outside, what kind of house you have or what kind of car you have or any of those things, when you look like this guy right here, you usually don't behave so well. And so when I have lots of people in my life in the crowd, what Jesus was saying is the crowd is filled with people that feel like that. And so, yes, their behavior causes me to forget their condition. I forget that they're lost and separated from God. I forget that the way they treat me and the way they behave is because they're separated. I get completely caught up in what they act like. And so I lose my compassion. It kills my compassion. Or I say things like this to myself, they deserve it. It's their fault. People tried to tell them not to. They did it anyways. And I forget this. This is so difficult to keep in mind. It's so hard with our family and our friends and people that we run around with. It's so difficult, and especially with the people that rub us wrong. And they rub you wrong. When you're stranded like that right there, you attack everybody in one way or another. I know when I'm that guy right there, I do. I know my wife and my family suffers when I feel like that guy. And Jesus was trying to tell everybody, he says, here's the purpose. Listen, most people are running around like that. And would you help me tell them they can turn to God because God cares about them? Just very, very simple. And I know as you look at it, it'll seem like nobody will listen. Nobody will do it. It'll never happen. But Jesus is saying, listen, I understand this awesome task. I know it looks like that. But you don't know all the different ways that I'm working. Don't be fooled by your eyes. They know they feel like that. And deep inside, they're wanting to connect. Some of them are already in church and it's not working. Some of them aren't, and that doesn't matter. They all share the same thing in common. I don't have any energy for life. But if you'll join me, you will. I wanted to give you an example. The most recent Rembrandt painting sold for $45 million. One painting, a Rembrandt, $45 million it sold for. Check this out. If you found a Rembrandt painting covered in mud, would you treat it like mud? Like it's worthless? I bet you'd treat it like a priceless work of art in need of restoration. Yet so often we struggle to treat muddied people like the immensely valuable, one-of-a-kind masterpiece God created them and us to be. I get so caught up in the mud because most of the time they're throwing it. And my compassion drains away. And then once my compassion's gone, I'm the one that has the low-level worry. I'm the one overwhelmed with doubt. And I'm the one that doesn't have the energy for life. Now look in your notes here, the bottom line. You're important to God's plan. Listen to what the Bible says here. You're important to God's plan. It's in your notes. Before I shaped you in the womb, I knew all about you. Before you saw the light of day, I had holy plans for you. And what's happening here is Jesus is saying, he's just letting people know, if you want to have purpose, if you want every day to get up with energy for life, join me because I need you. Always be a chart of the greater purpose that's occurring because I need you. Can you imagine, think of who your boss is right now. If you have a boss at work, just think of who your boss is. Or the president of the company or the CEO. Don't think of your wife for a second, not that boss. But just think in your mind, okay, who's the boss or who's the big wig at your job? Who's the one that runs the show there? And they call you into the office and they say, listen, I have some plans I'm wanting to do for the company, and I need you to help me. How important would you feel? Or what if it's a Saturday afternoon and it's football season and you're watching the Utes and it's halftime and Coach Winningham calls you on the telephone and says, listen, it's halftime and I have some great plays I want to put in the second half and I need you to come down and stand with me on the sidelines. How important and cool would that be? Jesus is making calls every day. He's saying, I need you. Because nobody can be you. Nobody has the crowd around them that you have around you. And so part of it is just being asked the question, what does compassion look like in your life? And who's the crowd that's around you? And could this week, the prayer dare, could you ask Jesus, say, God, could you help me look past their behavior and all their symptoms? And just remember the bottom line issue is they don't got you, and that's the problem. And if there's anything I can do to help, any act of kindness that you could use, anything at all, Lord, I'm available. Now look, the last scripture here I wanted to read to you. And we know that God causes everything to work together for the good of those who love God and called according to his purpose for them. And this means all the good stuff and all the bad stuff. So everything that's happening in the crowd around me and everything that's happening in my life. Part of the reason I lose compassion for people is because I lose compassion for myself. Because all the mistakes that I make and the failures that I have and the struggles in sin that I have. And then I lose compassion for myself. And I start to feel like a lost sheep, and I don't think that God's going to help me, and he's just going to leave me stranded on that rock. And part of being able to be following Jesus is understand that all things work together for the good because he loves you, and you're called according to his purpose. That the bad things that happen in my life, and a lot of them are because of the things I do. And the good things that happen in my life, and they all get mixed together, and somehow God takes them, and he creates something good out of them. And when that occurs, it says that there's a purpose that we have, an energy for life. Because then we're not lost sheep, we have a shepherd.